You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia. And this is episode 291 of the Columbia Calling podcast, just 9 short of that mythical 300 number. But we're going to keep going strong. Yeah, changes are afoot in my life, but I'll let you know about those later on, at a different later date, of course. But this episode 291, I am particularly proud of. We're talking to Hernando Echeverri, who's just come back from finishing his doctorate in London, UCL, that's University College London, and he's been writing about medicinal plants from the Colombian Amazon. So we'll be focusing on, of course, yagé and some others. That's ayahuasca to those who know Peru better. But we'll be focusing on those things and others. So it's a fascinating show about medicinal plants from the Colombian Amazon region, and in particular, the Putumayo region in the south of the country. So all sorts of issues going on there in Putumayo, very, very difficult area within Colombia. But before I hand over to Adrian Alsimo on the news report this week, let's give a big shout out to Adrian, who turned 44 this last week. Yes, he's older than me. I didn't think so. So it's always exciting when you find one of your peers to be older than you. Anyway, so write him a message, send him something on Facebook and say happy birthday, Adrian Alsimo, the director of Columbia Reports, who of course contributes the news segment to this Columbia Calling podcast. And long may this good relationship last. So I'm going to leave you in the capable hands of Adrian, of course, giving you the updates. Lots of going on in Colombia at the moment. And then we'll be back in segment 3 with Hernando Echeverri talking about medicinal plants in the Colombian Amazon. So thank you for listening and don't go away.
My name is Adrian Alsima and this is the news for Columbia Calling for September 16, 2019. Colombia's War Crimes Tribunal expelled dissident FARC leaders Jesús Santrich and El Paisa from the country's peace process. The two leaders joined the FARC's former political chief, Iván Márquez, in his call to rearm last month. Márquez was not immediately expelled, but the court said that all those who rearm will be expelled. Tensions with Venezuela reached a new climax last week after the neighbors began military exercises near the border. According to the Venezuelan government, some 150 troops are taking part in the exercises that would last until September 24. In response, Colombia and 10 other members of the Organization of American States called for an urgent meeting to activate a regional defense pact in which countries vow to protect each other in the event of an attack. Colombia's diplomatic offensive to designate Venezuela and Cuba as terrorist states triggered criminal charges against the foreign minister. At a meeting of the Organization of American States, Minister Carlos Holmes Trujillo accused the demobilized FARC leader of criminal activity. The unsubstantiated claim was part of a conspiracy theory linking Venezuela's disputed leader Nicolas Maduro with FARC dissident leader Iván Márquez. The minister backtracked before local press the day after, but failed to rectify his claims, according to the FARC's lawyer. Consequently, Trujillo risks facing slander charges. To make matters worse, the former ministry was forced to deny ties with drug trafficking organization Los Rastrojos. Images of Venezuelan opposition leader Juan Guaido posing with leaders of this group confirmed claims that the narcos helped him to travel to Colombia in February. After his arrival, government officials received the Venezuelan opposition leader. The day after, Guaido led a failed operation coordinated with US authorities to force aid into his country. Violence ahead of Colombia's October 27 local elections appeared to be spiraling out of control. In a letter, Colombia's mayor strongly urged President Iván Duque to take action to prevent more deadly violence. Last Wednesday alone saw more assassination attempts and death threats than in the entire first month of the election race that began on July 27. Local media reported on Sunday that a third mayoral candidate was assassinated. Former President Álvaro Uribe ordered to commit fraud and bribery to obstruct a Supreme Court investigation, according to evidence revealed by public television network Canal Uno. While the Supreme Court was investigating him, Uribe allegedly ordered his fixer Diego Cadena to pursue legal remedies to coerce a witness. This witness is one of two former members of the Bloque Metro who claim Uribe formed this death squad in the 1990s. So far, the Supreme Court has heard 24 witnesses, many of whom were allegedly bribed by the former president's aides. Uribe will have to appear before the court on October 8, after which the court can decide whether to send the former president to jail or allow him to await the verdict in liberty. The State Council upheld a ban on fracking in Colombia, rejecting government requests to loosen this ban. Because the government of President Iván Duque had already begun granting fracking licenses, it is now facing sanctions for violating the law. Furthermore, the companies whose licenses have become illegal could sue the government for violating made agreements. That's the end of this week's news bulletin. Now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCall.
And we're back. This is segment 3 of episode 291 of the Colombia Calling podcast. I'm Richard McCall. My very special guest this week is Hernando Echeverri. He's Colombian, but he's just come back from many years in London at UCL, that's University College London, finishing up his doctorate in anthropology. And he's been specializing in, well, I guess the most general way of putting it is he's been specializing in Amazonian medicine from a multi-sensory perspective. And his studies obviously take place in Colombia in the Amazonian region, but we're talking quite specifically in Putumayo, so in the south of the country. We talked about a little bit about Putumayo last week with Canadian Kaylee Kuczynski, but this guy Hernando is going to give us the real lowdown on what is going on and what this Amazonian medicine might mean to the world. So, welcome on Colombia Calling.
Thank you so much. I'm super happy to be here.
You're most welcome. How is it being back in Colombia?
It's interesting. Of course, you come back and nothing has changed, but everything has changed. So
But actually, you didn't go away for too long because you spent your investigative period, so almost a year and a half, in Putumayo. Yeah. So let's say your central base was Mocoa, but then you explored other regions.
So I did my ethnography in Mocoa, but I followed trade routes from the lowlands, from Puerto Leguizamo, which is really downriver, almost 11 hours through in boat, to Pasto. So I embarked many ecosystems, highland tundras, páramos, went down to foothill mountains and then deep into the lowland forests.
And what inspired you to take up an investigation of this part? You're from Bogota. Yeah. You don't look like someone from Putumayo or Pasto. You know, you're going to stand out.
Yeah. So I did my master's research also in this topic.
Yeah.
So I went there and it's like suddenly like it was. My eyes glowed with the possibilities of this area. Okay. It's supreme. It's amazing. It's beautiful. The Mocoa is surrounded by beautiful forests, mountains, and beautiful waterfalls. And it was kind of, and the people are great, even though they are probably the people that have seen the violence. One of the areas that has seen most violence in Colombia Putumayo is an amazing place. So that's kind of been always my calling to go back to there.
That's amazing. I've never been, and I keep regretting that I've never been, and it keeps slipping away from me, but I will go. I will go at some point. I'll have to take the whole family, but I will go. Now, you're doing, okay, so this doctorate in Amazonian medicine, I imagine you're now looking for postdoctoral opportunities. Yeah. So if anyone's out there who's hearing this, academics, I know there are some academics out there listening to this, you know, get in touch. You can get in touch with us through the Facebook site, Twitter, and of course email. But let's talk about this then. So what are some of the principal medicines that you studied in order to really explore this field?
So I work primarily with shamans from the Taita Yajeceros, which for anybody who doesn't know, Yajé in Colombia means ayahuasca. Mm-hmm. It's the old Tikuna name that has just kept on going through generations instead of the Quichua ayahuasca. Mm-hmm. I worked with them to see the impact of certain practices on the ecosystem. So for example, the use of certain medicinal plants and see if they have been over-harvested or if they have not, or if the creeping disappearance and deforestation of the forest has caused a collapse on some populations of these plants. And it is happening. Yeah. I'm seeing a lot of problems with people trying to find medicines that they don't. They used to use, but they don't find anymore.
But there's a lot of deforestation in the Putumayo. Yes. I imagine for aggressive cattle farming.
It's a mixture of things. You have aggressive cattle farming. You have the expansion of the agricultural frontier with the oil minings, because there's a lot of oil in that area. The gold rush as well. There's a big gold rush happening right now. And probably one of the biggest deforestation factors, cocaine.
So coca for cocaine, gold, oil. It's oil, and of course, and then you say cattle farming. So Putumayo is at the crossroads of all of these, let's say, extractive industries, and the traditional inhabitants are, of course, the ones losing out, I can imagine.
So many of the resguardos, what we call here, like the land reservation for indigenous people, have been kind of isolated. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people don't find in their own territory the plants that they used to use. They need to go into the areas that haven't been deforested. So like the areas where cocaine plantations can't really grow, the steep mountains. Yeah. Usually it's where that happens.
It's a bit, okay, it's complex. I mean, Colombia has these complexities that we all know about, but how to unravel them a little bit. But I want to know about Yajé. It's a vine, and you can cultivate it?
So yes, you can cultivate it, and it's actually not that hard to cultivate it. Usually they just get a little piece of stick and just put it in the ground, and it just kind of grows by itself.
So fertile.
It's kind of like how it reproduces in the wild. If a tree falls, the liana just grows in the other area. So humans are basically just took advantage of that and just started to grow it everywhere. And of course, there's a big trade of yajé there. Because in the highlands, it doesn't grow. Yeah. So like Sibundoy and Pasto is too cold for it. Okay. We're talking about like almost 3,000 meters.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really grow. So the shamans from the highlands need to buy yajé from the shamans of the lowlands. So there has been a historical trade of medicinal plants there. And that's why, for example, my dissertation is El Camino de la Medicina. Mm-hmm. Because of that road that connected the highlands to the lowlands to bring yajé to the highlands.
So you took these ancient trade paths for Amazonian product. That's amazing.
So there is a trade, it's starting to get patented and started to get, but it used to take 3 days to walk.
Oh, really?
From the highlands to the lowlands to Mocoa. And it's beautiful, of course, like these clouded forests that look like coral reefs. It's something that you can't even imagine.
That's incredible, and of course it's still used today.
Yeah, it's still used today, but by car now. Yeah. People just drive it for hours. Yeah. But also, it's a beautiful road. Yeah.
Okay, it's not the trampoline of death.
Yes.
It is exactly. A trampoline of death, which is known to be like one of the most dangerous roads mm-hmm. in Colombia. Okay.
Yeah, it's
exactly. I wanted to do that once for a while, but
it's beautiful. You can't imagine how beautiful it is.
Just maintain your concentration on the views and the beauty and not the sheer drops. Of
not
the
sheer drops, exactly.
Cool. And then so we've got Yahe as one, and we'll come back to Yahe because it's the one I know that people want to know about.
Yeah.
But and another of your medicinal plants is Yoko.
Yeah.
Okay. So people won't know what that
no.
is.
No. Yoko is a relative of the Guaraná.
Okay.
Which is like a caffeinated drink mm-hmm. that a lot of people use for like energy drinks and all of that.
Mm.
The problem with Yoko is that it only grows wild.
Okay.
It doesn't, you can't really cultivate it. Okay. It's very, as they call it over there, it's very celosa. It's very jealous plant.
I love these terms.
And so you have to kind of keep the forest very virgin, very, not virgin, it's the wrong term, sorry. Mm. It, very well kept.
Yeah.
So that the yoko can grow really well.
And what does the yoko look like? Is this a vine as well?
It's also a vine. Wow. And it has many varieties.
Mm-hmm.
And you can only taste the variety if you drink it. Huh. If you only know, you know, only know what the variety is if right. you drink it. So some of them, like Yoko Rojo. Is very strong
yeah.
in your, and even gets you dizzy and even like makes you like sit down. And then there's other ones. Yoko Amarillo is a little bit less strong, a little bit. So there's like that variation, but yeah.
So I can see you in the future. That you know, in a bookstore, there's that big book Yahe.
Yeah.
I can see you in the future writing a book like this on all the medicinal plants.
Well, my main goal is kind of to legitimize a little bit the medicine and to kind of say like, oh, it's not just traditional, it's not just magic, it actually works. So mm-hmm. like what you were talking about, my postdoc,
mm-hmm.
I've been working on a project on seeing how this medicine helps communities that suffered from the avalanche.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know, so
the 2017 Mocoa when
yeah,
hundreds.
Almost 300 people died. Oh. And there's still a lot of trauma because of that.
Yeah.
So the town is very traumatized.
Yeah.
And I want to see how the people kind of, how the traditional medicine kind of like helps mm-hmm. people deal with and understand that trauma.
Mm. Well, I mean, let's say the people in Mocoa have more connection with the communities nearby. There's more, let's say, connection with the original inhabitants of the region. So perhaps they have, I'm sure there's colonos as well,
but
they have an understanding of the nature. So, I mean, an impossible question to answer, I think, but what kind of percentage of the population would participate in, let's say, these ritual ceremonies or medicine?
I'm not really sure how many people, but I would say it's at least like 30%.
That's a big percentage.
Yes. Yahe and Yahe shamans in Mocoa have gotten a huge political power lately.
Yeah.
So now you see them leading before any big, like the governor is gonna talk. So they bring a Yahe shaman and he like precedes her and he opens the space by praying for that, by doing soplos, which is like
the tobacco and the smoke.
Yeah.
Like
with a chondur, which is another medicinal plant.
I have to ask what that is.
It's a little rhizome. And it's probably one of the most complex medicinal plants in their repertoire.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's time because it's such a complicated plant.
If it's so complicated, when you study these things, do you have to know the chemical breakdowns as well?
I do, but I feel like it's more complicated because of the local community understand it. How they understand it is complicated. So chondur is complicated because they use it for cleansing spaces, they use it for hunting, they use it for shooting arrows to their enemies.
It's a multi-purpose plant. But this is, it's fascinating. Today in this day and age, we're opening up more to, let's say, original medicines, natural medicines. I need one.
Yeah.
Natural medicines, and so you might be ahead of something thinking about this. So do people like hire you to talk about these things, or do they get you to sort of, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about this. Here comes Hernando. He can.
I usually am just in academia right now. I'm trying to expand myself into non-academic roles.
Yeah.
Because as you know, academia often keeps itself in a little ivory tower.
And yeah. Just,
but the whole point is kind of allowing the communities to talk about their own medicine. Yeah. I feel like it's more important to legitimize it in science.
Well, definitely. Now, okay, so you've covered the land and the beauty, and now these medicines that you're talking about are truly sacred medicines. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a ceremony. It's not something you just, oh, I'm going to take a swig of this, like a Dolex Forte or something like that. These are sacred. There is a ceremony around it. You know, you have to be in the right frame of mind amongst the right people. And of course, I suppose, have participated or have learned about all of these ceremonies.
Yeah. So it's very important if you to know who is leading the ceremony. Shamans, with the popularity of ayahuasca right now, there's a growing number of shamans who don't really have the training or have not gotten to the point that they can offer yajé, which is like where they are, the maximum shamans. And that's a bit tricky. So that's where you get a lot of complications. There's also a problem with, even though yajé is, you can cultivate it, there's obviously a more demand. And there's more demand towards yajé that makes like how Westerners want it, no? That gives you the visions that instead of the medicine, no? Which is what the main purpose of it was before.
Yeah, I mean, when I participated all those years ago in Iquitos in Peru, it was a ceremony, and the other people there, with the exception of me and my friend, were there to cure alcoholism, other things. These were people from, let's say, Cusco. They were indigenous people from Cusco, but they come down to the lowlands to do this. But I think there's a damaging element, of course, of this, let's say, tourism for hallucinogens. I don't like talking about it particularly, but of course, I had to do reports on it all those years ago when a young English backpacker from Bristol by the name of Henry Miller died after a ceremony. Let's get this right. It wasn't during a ceremony. He may have had convulsions and a fit. It was a second ceremony. Let's clarify. He had the first ceremony one night, and his reaction was that he didn't have a reaction. So he was a little, I think he was upset about that. And he heard that some other people in his hostel were going to be doing a ceremony the following night. And so he joined in. And potentially what happened is that the shaman, or I mean, pseudo shaman who was organizing it, increased the dosage of various elements that then, you know, put him at risk and tragically led to the end of his life. So what could happen?
One of the main problems by that, if people want more of a reaction to it, is that they might add some additives that aren't necessarily good.
Yeah.
So there's one in particular which I always recommend to be very careful, no? Mm-hmm. Which is borrachero, brugmansia.
Which is the date rape drug, which is the angel's trumpet.
Angel's trumpet. Yeah. It's where you get the date rape, right? Exactly. Wow. So it's tradition to add it, but only in extreme cases. Mm-hmm. So shamans in the highlands, which is mostly in the highlands where borrachero grows really well.
Oh, really?
They put it in their yajé just to take that extra step. If they have a complicated case to diagnose, they take borrachero. It kind of makes you jump one more step.
So it's turning that notch up further. And you say jump up one more step. If you've got borrachero, it's going to send people into a trance.
Yeah, it's famous for that. Mm. It's famous for sending people to trances, and it's famous for making people sick, and famous for making you almost like non-responsive. So that's where you get, for example, a lot of cases in some, I'm not gonna mention any of, but a lot of cases of like rape and sexual abuse are caused by that. No, if you manage to take people down,
It's all of these things must be approached in the most responsible manner and amongst people who are you know, you can trust, yeah. Because
yeah,
otherwise,
yeah. And the communities there are trying to move towards something more, because before, at least when I was doing field work there, there wasn't any like a big group of people, like a institution that regulated who was a shaman and who was not. And this is what is happening right now. The Umiyak, which used to exist before, which is the something Asociación de Yajeceros. We have to look it up.
The union of Yajeceros.
So they are starting to, there's a new generational shift, and they're starting to like be extra worried on that, on the use of porrachero, on the sexual advances. So this is what's changing right now, and it's and I feel like it's a positive change.
Well, it has to be. I mean, if you're just a little bit more, I don't even want to say regulation, but just a bit more understanding.
Yeah. It's like an internal regulation. So it's like the shamans themselves go and test other shamans and like, oh no, this guy doesn't really know what he's doing, don't go to them.
It's important. I mean, otherwise, you know, we've all heard of these stories as well. And I'm always a little bit wary of this tourism. Of course, I was in it as well. I mean, you know, but when we talk about the medicinal reaction of Yahe, so let's take Mokoa, which in 2017 had that it was just an unthinkable disaster. Yeah. The landslide that came down washed, of course, the poorest people, because they're living on
the brink of the river.
On the edge of the river where the land doesn't cost anything. And so they're, but I mean, how would Yahe help them, the survivors? Does it help them do?
Yahe has a very special quality, is that it kind of allows you to understand your health context, mm-hmm. No, it allows you to see, for example, what's harming you. Mm-hmm. It allows you to understand why, what behaviors you are doing, because it's also very introspective.
Okay.
So if you're when you drink yahe, it actually makes you think a lot, and the shaman say it's, you have a conversation with the spirit of the yahe. It's like you're talking to another spirit. And this is what I feel like is the most advantages for that type of thing, for like trauma, because people get a sense of their place and they understand their role in the healing process, no, and how to move forward from the trauma, the so vicious trauma.
But see, this is, you're talking about an incredibly important side of this, and of course the tourist and whomever is like, I want to see the jungle and I want to see the jaguar and I want to see all these amazing psychedelic swirls, but it's not assured that you're ever going to see that. So it's almost like, okay, you're talking to the spirit, but it's an internal conversation. It's self-discovery.
Yeah, it's okay. Exactly that. And that's kind of how the local communities would conceive it.
Yeah.
So if you're sick, and you would go to the shaman, and the shaman would not only give you yahe to you to so you can understand it, but he will also drink it at the same time so that that he can see the attacks or the sickness that you have.
And afterwards, would he then discuss this with
you? And then you would go and discuss with it. So it's like a doctor's appointment. Yeah. So that's, and then if he sees like a big problem, he's like, oh yes, here's a list of plants. Go to the market, and that's where I came in when doing my field work. It's like, oh yes, here's the list of plants, and so it's interesting how those plants that the shaman would give are suddenly found in Bogota. Like, why are they found in Bogota? It's mostly because of like a flow of knowledge from the Putumayo here to Bogota.
So I mean, we could go into Palo Quemado, so the big market in downtown, and you could find most of the plants that you have studied.
Yes, most definitely, almost all.
Yeah, and yahe would be found there.
Yes, if you know where to look. Yes, you can find bottles of yahe. Not recommendable, but you can find it because it's part of it. Yeah.
But and then so listen, when you go to one of these plant stands and they've got all the bundles up and there's everything else, but then they have those boxes of like we will say like pure love and strength and money. That's all.
That's
as well?
Plants as well. So there's like a whole artisanal pharmaceutical industry in Colombia that produces a lot of those little ointments and jarabes and drinking.
What's your thought on these then?
I feel like they are mostly harmless.
Yeah.
I feel like if you want to actually use these plants, it's better to use them, not the processed thing, but like just buy it and you can learn how to use them.
Yeah.
Obviously, very carefully, or go to the shaman and ask him to what he recommends. But I don't feel like they're bad.
Yeah.
The only problem I see is the demand that it's growing, and it's affecting the population of these plants in the forest. So like chuchuwasa, another big plant.
Chuchuwasa.
Which grows, it's a tree.
Yeah.
And they need to harvest all of the bark. So it kills the tree. So you cut down the tree, harvest all the bark. And it takes at least 10 years to grow a mature plant, a tree. So that's kind of one of the main problems, like the collapse of the...
And what is the chuchuwasa for?
It's mostly for, it's an anti-inflammatory. Ah. So you can pulp the bark with water and put it in your, like if you have like a bruised elbow or something, just put like a mashed chuchuwasa and it will help you cool down the inflammation.
It's amazing. I mean, I'm sure there's something for every day of the year, sure. I was in... where the Divino Niño is, down in the south.
In 20 Julio.
Yeah, 20 Julio. And there was all sorts of stuff on sale.
It's incredible. Yeah. And it's beautiful because then at the end of the day, it's all mixed of the different people that has come into Colombia. No? You have African medicine from these escaped slaves who learned how to use the medicinal plants here in Colombia. You have European medicines brought by missionaries. You have the indigenous local medicine, and you have a bunch of other things that have been arriving. And this has made this beautiful syncretic medicine that we know as traditional medicine here.
See, I like this thing about the syncretism because it's kind of a bit like religion in its way. Yeah. I'm not a religious person, but you can see in a lot of the churches around the country that they have been placed on sacred areas belonging to, let's say, indigenous people. And within the church, you've got not only, let's say, the Virgin Mary or Jesus Christ, but there's other symbols in there.
Yeah.
And it's made it just a little bit more, I guess, tolerant in these communities. I do not know Mokoa, but I'm sure there's examples of this.
No, it is. It is like this. I will recommend a book, but if you have more interest in that like type of academic stuff, I recommend Tausig, Michael Tausig.
Yeah, he's great.
And he's very interesting, and he talks about that type of flows of knowledge and how the different people bring together. Yeah. And there's a definite relationship between medicine and religion. No? Mm-hmm. It's that need to like heal something that is unknown, that's like face something that you don't really understand. Mm-hmm.
And about the ayahuasca yahe, and I know you see, I didn't vomit, and everyone's always talking about the vomiting like it's a purge. Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that the purge?
Okay. Yeah, a lot of the old traditional medicine in Amazonia was purgative, so emetic. It's just how they used to think of like how sickness infects you, so you have to like take it out. So they have a lot of medicines, for example, for purging blood. Not purging, but like cleaning your blood. A lot of medicines to make you vomit or to have diarrhea, just for that purpose, no? And so
have diarrhea and then you're dehydrated. Be careful. But this purging, I mean, so I got a question for you, and it's a personal question from myself. I didn't vomit. Does that mean I did not need to purge? that I'm pure of heart?
No, I don't know. Except that. Yahe is very, it's very particular at the end of the day. It's very subjective, it affects everybody different, and it also depends on how you prepared for that night. If you didn't eat during the day, so that affects it. And if you kind of, there's like some certain foods that you have to come and not eat. Depends on the community, you know. Mm. Some people say it's pork, some people say it's chili. it's very subjective.
That's very varied indeed. Yeah. So tell us, I mean, for you, when you were doing these experiments and the investigation, what was the most exciting medicine for you to study? One that really made you wake up and go, this is why I'm doing it.
I feel like the Chondur one was the one I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Because it's such a, like, you don't really notice it until you notice it. And then it's everywhere. It's like, oh my God, it's everywhere. And they use it, and it's very important for, like, for example, the ceremony of Yahé. You drink Yahé, and the shaman constantly gives you the smell of Chondur. Because it helps you calm down, it helps you kind of concentrate on your visions or on your healing process. He uses it to like cleanse space. So it's a very interesting plant, and the most interesting part of it is that you can find it from Mocoa, from the highlands of Putumayo to Suriname.
Really?
And it's like, and it just, there's probably, it's probably linked to Pan-Amazonian trade networks that existed before Spanish arrived.
That's very cool. So when I was in the ceremony all those years ago, there was something blown on me. I just assumed it was tobacco, but you're probably clarifying.
There's probably Chondur.
And you know, I was brought forward as I drank the ayahuasca, and then the shaman would chant, and I guess it was in the indigenous tongue. But he also made the sign of the cross, which again, that
complete syncretism.
Yeah, complete. And I always thought that was, for me at the beginning, I was young, so I was like, what's this going on? You know, I didn't think I was signing up for something Catholic. Or
it's not necessarily Catholic or low. It's just kind of a mixture of things, no? It's the God is already an important entity in the Amazonia. But so is the spirits of the forest, the spirit of Yahé. So these are just, it's a multi agents. There's so many agents in that area that you have to constantly be aware of everybody.
And in 1.5 years in Mocoa, I mean, how many times were you in ceremonies? You can't even count.
I can't count. Yeah, too many.
Too many. And when you went back to London, your thesis tutor and so on. Yeah. This is someone who, I hope, knows about what you were doing. You know.
I worked in the Amazonian team. Yahé ayahuasca is a Pan-Amazonian plant. Yeah. So you have, like, in Brazil, you have also syncretic religions like the Santo Daime and the Vegetalismo.
Yeah.
In Peru, you have, of course, the Shipibo and Yerbateros and Ayahuasqueros. And in Colombia, we have the people of the Yahé.
It's such an interesting thing. And your doctoral thesis, it will be published?
I hope so. I'm trying. I just sent the manuscript out, so it will hopefully in a couple of years.
Because it takes time. But it'll be done by University of London Press.
Yeah.
And so in English, and so we'll be able to find it somewhere. You let me know.
Just let me know
because it'll be interesting. Because of course, I'm sure it's not only academic, but it's going to come from a very personal perspective.
I hope it ends up like that. Yeah. I hope it ends up like something that people are like, wow, this has so many different layers to it, no? Mm. And forget that it's just like, oh yes, this traditional magic that you used there. No.
Traditional magic. I don't want to call it magic.
No, it's not. It's science at the end of the day. So
now, and also as we finish up, I mean, we're coming down to the end. In Putumayo, there's a special sort of, let's say, reserve or national park that's been protected because of the medicinal nature of the plant.
So as we were talking, the deforestation is happening, and a lot of communities have been isolated from there where they used to be. So the national government, with like, there's a whole generation of anthropologists in Colombia that were focused on this. Mm-hmm. They pushed to create a national park to protect the medicinal plants. Mm-hmm. And it's in one of these steep mountain sites. And they managed to protect quite a bit. It goes from 500 meters to almost 4,000 meters.
Okay.
So and it's all just like different layers of ecosystems. So you have like different You have hot climate, cold climate, and all in between.
So all the different microclimates to be able to grow. And it's been successful then?
I feel like it has. There's obviously a lot of politics, like everything.
Everything in Colombia is politics.
So, but it's working, and I feel like the fact that they expanded the park, because it used to be only for the Cofán. Mm. Now they're trying to incorporate the other communities of the Yohe, which is successful.
But I don't know Putumayo, but we touched on it at the beginning. Plenty of violence, that is the conflict and let's say sub-conflicts which have spread out around it. And Putumayo, of course, is strategic for the routes to the Pacific coast and so on. My fear at the end of it is something like this park would just be a strategic corridor for the transportation of coca or
the
weapons.
Thing is it's quite inaccessible.
Okay.
So that's the thing, and that's also a problem for the communities. Mm-hmm. Which is but it's quite inaccessible. It's the big problem is as the, for example, fumigation.
Yeah.
As the cocaine plantations are fumigated outside the areas, they usually go into national parks, because in national parks they can't be fumigated. So that's one of the big problems that we're seeing there.
And of course, I mean, fumigation is incredibly damaging.
Yeah,
to these,
it ruins the soil.
How many decades or generations does it need to even recover?
Mm-hmm. I one of the shamans that I used to visit a lot in Putumayo, he had his shamanic hut or
yes.
In an old cocaine field. Mm. He was trying to recuperate it, to heal it. Mm. And he was trying to grow things, but
nothing
grew.
Well, there he is. There you have it. I mean, straight up example of the damage done by the fumigation. I mean, we are here in the city. We are so far removed from the realities. Yeah. I bet you feel, now you're going into postdoctorate investigations. You feel really out of place here in Bogota.
Well, yes and no. I feel like here at the end of the day, it's where the power is in the city, in the country. So it's always important to let people know and make them understand that it's not necessarily that this is just happening in the middle of the forest. It all affects us as well. Mm-hmm. And kind of like global warming, it's like, that's everywhere. It's happening at the same time. So.
And again, the final thing, in 1.5 years, you saw a lot down there and you experienced a lot. Were you at any point in any danger from any of these groups or were you told to leave?
Yeah, but never like really in danger. I went just during after the peace process, the peace has been signed. So it was like this golden point.
Before. Yeah, the golden era.
The golden era when it was beautiful.
About
and
6 months. How sad to say that. I am a believer, so I want to believe.
But it's true. There was like this moment of like calm.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, oh, excited.
Euphoria, because it's those images of the gorillas leaving the jungle.
Yeah, yeah. It's excited that new things happening. Even and Putumayo has always been go towards left. Mm. They have always been they had a huge problem with paramilitaries, and this kind of like gave them hope.
Yeah.
And I was there when it was like, oh my God, it's so hopeful, and I was so hopeful.
Yeah.
And who knows? Maybe still like in Putumayo, there is still a movement towards peace. Mm-hmm. More than other areas of the country.
The places most hard hit by the conflict seem to be those who are most invested in
peace.
Of course,
that's the reality.
It's the reality. Well, listen, where can we find anything that you've written? I mean, is there stuff online that we can find?
Yeah, there's another podcast that I did, I'm publishing right now, so this will be a little bit process. I just finished my PhD 2 weeks ago.
Take a break. It's like see some friends. Yeah. Take a break. Go on holiday.
But it will happen soon. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing your stories with us. Really interesting. First time we've ever got to be able to talk about medicinal plants here on Columbia Calling, and I know that my listeners out there will appreciate this, because it's we're taking into account a part of Columbia where the grand majority have never been and can't even envisage it aside from the disaster images in the press. So I'll take this moment to say thank you so much to Hernando, Dr. Hernando Echeverri, episode 291, for talking to us about his anthropological investigations on Amazonian medicine.
Thank you so much. Yeah, this was great. I love talking about it.
Well, no, you've got to geek out on what is your passion. So it's really, really been fascinating. And I hope I haven't bored you all with my own tales and so on, because, you know, Hernando is the guy that needs to talk. But we'll be back next week, everyone. And get in touch, columbiacalling@gmail.com, Facebook, Columbia Calling, Twitter, @ColumbiaCalling. If you want to get in touch, if you want to nominate someone to be on the show to talk about something that has something, albeit tiny, to do with Columbia. So thank you for listening again. I've been Richard McCall. This has been Columbia Calling.